You're listening to Uprooted, the podcast from the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy. I'm Josh Wise. Today, I'm joined on the podcast by IATP senior attorney Sharon Treat to talk about the article she wrote for our site called Agribusiness's Secretive Plans to Unravel Food Safety and Worker Protections. Sharon, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Josh.
All right, so starting at the beginning, what is the Regulatory Cooperation Council?
Well, you know, most people don't even know it exists. I didn't know it existed until maybe a year or so ago. It turns out that this thing was created back in 2011. It was an outgrowth of the original NAFTA, but it wasn't written into the original NAFTA. But what did come out of that were some committees that were intended to get regulators together between Canada and the United States to see whether or not they could, quote, harmonize regulations.
So let me just interject here, because you've been working on trade policy for how long?
Well, off and on since maybe 2003. I certainly wasn't full time.
And you've been a public interest lawyer for how long?
Since for a really long time.
So if anybody's going to know about the Regulatory Cooperation Council, it should probably be someone like you. And you're saying you didn't know about it until last year. So I just bring that up to kind of highlight the level of secrecy that this council kind of operates on.
Yeah, no, I think that you're absolutely right. I mean, that's, I think, the main concern about this entity, because, I mean, there's more than just that it's secret and people don't know about it. It's also what its mission is. But the two things together mean that there's virtually no opportunity for the public interest to be really under serious consideration. And, you know, as I said, the goal was to get these parties together to, quote, harmonize regulations. That is to say, look for different regulations on both sides of the border that might be impeding trade in some way, and then come up with basically joint policies that were the same on both sides of the border. But what we see, and we now have a window into this because the federal government asked for comments about what the role of this Regulatory Cooperation Council should be going forward. And as a result, we actually do have some public documents that were submitted by various, mostly industry submitters, saying what it is they would like this RCC or Regulatory Cooperation Council to achieve. And it really is a window into a real deregulatory agenda that's about getting rid of a lot of protections that we take for granted.
And so let's talk about some of those industry objectives. Specifically with food and livestock, you outlined a number in the article. Can you start with meat inspection and food safety?
Sure. So the North American Meat Institute, which is a lobbying group for basically industrialized meat companies, along with the Canadian Meat Council, had jointly submitted comments, and they want to just get rid of all border inspections of meat that comes across the border. I mean, no inspections at all. So why does this matter? Well, Canadian and U.S. regulations aren't always the same. And so if you have something that's completely banned in the United States, for example, there's a zero tolerance policy for listeria in the United States for products that are regulated by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, but that's not the case in Canada. So if Canadian products were coming across to the U.S. that potentially met Canadian standards but did not meet the zero tolerance provision of the United States, there would be no way of checking that and knowing that that was going on, because there would be no border inspection.
And I think also, you know, it speaks to any really credible inspection at all, because a lot of the inspection is becoming privatized in both countries, right?
Right. So, I mean, that's the other reason that this is really problematic, because those border inspections perform kind of a cross-checking on what has become a very limited amount of inspection going on in the United States and also in Canada, where much of this, inspection requirements have been privatized or self-reporting by industry. And the line speeds, as we've pointed out in a number of articles that are posted on the IATP website, those line speeds have been speeded up over time, so that the potential to have more problems in terms of more food safety problems, and also the potential that the kind of inspection that's going on already is inadequate because you simply miss stuff that's flying by at this pace, is very great. So certainly those border inspections provide an additional check. And one thing that I'd like to mention here is that if you go back and look at the documents that are available about this Regulatory Cooperation Council, they came up with a work plan in 2016, which was specifically about meat inspection. And this work plan was, the whole work plan pretty much said, well, we're going to adopt the recommendations in the plan of the North American Meat Institute. And, that is actually a goal of this council, was to, in fact, speed up the lines, I guess. I mean, I went to find that plan that was referenced, and I couldn't find it, even on the websites of these lobbying companies.
Right, and so these plans kind of extend beyond any particular administration, right? This is sort of a longstanding goal.
Yes, it is. And in addition to ourselves, Food and Water Watch submitted comments to this about this Regulatory Cooperation Council, and they pointed out that this demand for getting rid of border inspections goes back to 2011. The same organizations were trying to get it back then, but of course now we have a different administration, one that has been all in favor of deregulating kind of on steroids, and so the possibility is that our U.S. government might agree to something that really is quite reckless.
So the other area you talked about is the consumer's right to know, whether it's labeling or the use of language. Talk about some of those things that industry is bringing up.
Sure. Well, again, the North American Meat Institute has a number of other demands that they would like to see. And one of the things they mentioned is that they would like to see this Regulatory Cooperation Council essentially overturn new regulations that the Canadian government is putting into place that would require warning labels on certain unhealthy food and have additional restrictions on advertising to children. And it's aimed at reducing the really incredible levels of obesity and diabetes and other health-related diets. And this is a proven strategy to warn people, let them understand when they're at the grocery store that certain products are, very high in fat or sugar or, other unhealthy ingredients. So that industry, a whole bunch of agribusiness industry put pressure on the U.S. government during the NAFTA negotiations, this renegotiation. And there actually was a proposal that flat out made it almost impossible to do this kind of warning labels on foods. And that,
which you reported on, I mean, blogged on. Right.
Yeah, we did blog on that, and we talked about that, and because what happened is somebody leaked that text because I think they were so upset about it. It came from Mexico somewhere, and there was a huge public outcry, and so this didn't go forward. Well, fast forward to today, and we now have these same companies saying, oh no, NAFTA doesn't allow this labeling. Even though the specific text didn't get into it, they're still making the case. And they're trying to achieve it through this Regulatory Cooperation Council, because they're saying, well, these Canadian rules are inconsistent with what we have in the United States, because, of course, they're better. I mean, for consumers, they give them more information. And so they're saying this is a so-called non-tariff barrier. This, gets in the way of fair trade, free trade. And so we should harmonize our regulations, and the Canadians should get rid of this new regulation that they just came up with.
So in addition to attacking Canada's labeling requirements, they're also just attacking the English language, right? So they want to be able to use Latin terms to describe what's in some of the products, right?
Right. Yeah. The Chamber of Commerce submitted comments and they said, look, there's, 57 ingredients that for some consumer products, that we think we should be able to use Latin terms because apparently Canada does allow this, but the U.S. does not. Well, if it's a Latin term, you don't know what it means. Let's face it. I took Latin, but most people didn't. And don't ask me anything about Latin because that was when I was in seventh grade. So, but this is the lengths to which these companies are going to basically try to prevent people from knowing what is in their products. And if that is their, if they're trying to prevent you from even knowing what the ingredient is, imagine, how can you even find out if it's safe or not? I mean, and these are many products that may not be particularly safe, particularly cosmetic products that are not very well regulated right now in the United States.
I know this question might sound rhetorical or self-answering, but, and of course, we do have the Trump administration right now, but what prevents something like the Regulatory Cooperation Council from advocating for higher standards? Because one would surmise, based on the Obama administration, that they would have been more supportive of more regulation. You know, we talk about this a lot, right? That trade policy undermines domestic policy more often than not. But, like, why?
Well, I mean, I think it has a lot to do with who's at the table. And that is primarily big business. And so their interest is in reducing their costs at all costs, basically. And so, you don't see a lot of public interest organizations representing consumers or farmers or anyone else at these, in these working groups. In fact, I haven't been able to even find out who is in the working groups. For example, I was researching online trying to find out who was in the working group for the meat recommendations, and I couldn't find a list. And I did find a list of two contacts for Canada and the U.S. I emailed them, and all of my emails bounced back. So this is the kind of, when I say it's secret, it really is. They say, well, we're very transparent, but it's really not, because you can't find out who is at the table. You can't really find out what their plans are. And then what's very unclear is what happens with these recommendations, but they go into the general regulatory process, and they're taken into consideration by regulators when they make decisions about what regulations to have. And what we have seen is it seems to be really create deregulatory pressure as opposed to anything that would improve standards. I mean, a perfect example is one of the things that's proposed by the feed industry came in and they said, we should harmonize regulations because Canada requires this notice to workers about the fact that this feed grain can explode. Something I didn't even realize about, but of course, you're located in the Midwest where you've got a lot of grain silos where this is a big issue. So I
got to tell you a story. So the legend is the reason that Minneapolis is a medical technology hub is because one of the first prosthetic factories in the country sprouted up right next to the grain mill, where workers would routinely get their limbs blown off because of explosions.
Wow. So that puts into perspective why this matters, right? Yeah. So you could see this industry saying, well, Canada has this additional labeling and information that has to go to workers. The U.S. doesn't have it. The U.S. needs to step up and provide the same kind of labeling. Then it's easy for everybody. We, trade across the borders, et cetera, et cetera. But of course, instead, they're like, let's get rid of this labeling and information requirement that Canada has. And so this is really, it's the danger of this. It's really a concern. And again, it's being these are public comments. I mean, fortunately, a couple of us are kind of on top of this and looking at this now and paying attention, but this has sort of been going on for a while and no one really knows about it.
Well, and I think it kind of speaks to you know, if you don't get your way through the normal legislative process, you create a different process that only you have access to. And I think you as a former legislator and I as a lobbyist kind of have some sense for how that works about, you know, using the legislature to establish a commission or a panel or something that has, you know, some teeth to it, but is less subject to public scrutiny. And I think that especially when we're talking about trade policy or international policy, those panels really kind of operate without a lot of oversight, right?
Yeah, that's certainly the case. A lot less oversight. It's a lot less public. And then, of course, they're set up to focus on different criteria than what really is the basis for a lot of this regulation. So, for example, if they're set up to say, does this burden companies that are involved in trade? And they answer, well, yes, it does. Then the answer is, well, let's fix that burden and get rid of this burden. As opposed to the regulators without this council being involved are looking at it and saying, okay, are workers getting hurt because they don't know that feed grain explodes the same way food grain explodes? And then they would say, okay, well, we need to protect them. So let's come up with regulations that do that. So it's going on a separate track that has different criteria that's very pro-business and doesn't really take into consideration what the impacts are on the public. And again, you see this in the comments from these industries. I mean, I gave many examples in the article I wrote, but you know, there is a downside to all these things, and not one of the comments submitted by these industries said, of course, you know, there could be implications for worker health and safety or for the ozone layer or for, you know, food safety. They don't mention it. They just say, you know, there's no problem here. We just need to, you know, fix the differences in the regulations.
Yeah. And so there are real world effects here. And you talk a little bit about how the RCC originally dealt with rail safety and one of the pretty disastrous consequences of that, right?
Yeah, I mean, we don't really know whether the RCC caused the rail safety problems that we've experienced, but we do know it did nothing to improve them. And certainly, you know, this has sort of come up as something that we've been looking at IETP because of a recent book tour by Bruce Campbell, who wrote this book about this huge disaster in Lac Mégantic, which is a little Quebec village, which really isn't too far from where I live in Maine. And in fact, at the time, there was this runaway train, and back in 2013, that was parked overnight. You have to keep the brakes on, the energy on to run the brakes. Only one person that's running this train. Anyway, big disaster, 72 cars basically went on a runaway and exploded and destroyed much of the town, killed, you know, many, many people. I think it's around 45, 47 people were killed, polluted the lake there. And this was a disaster that could have been prevented. People already knew that the standards governing the kinds of cars that this explosive gas was in were inadequate. They already knew that the track needed to be fixed. They already knew that one person trying to control a 72 car by himself was certainly inadequate. And all of these things, and whatever discussions went on between 2011 and 2013 did nothing to prevent further deregulation on the Canadian side. And the U.S. actually had some somewhat better regulations, but what we have seen now is with the Trump administration, they've gone on to try to roll back four or five different standards that were put in place on the U.S. side to try to prevent similar kinds of accidents in the future. So what we see is that this whole, you know, you can't say, okay, well, this council caused that accident, right? But it did nothing to slow down the sort of single-minded focus on the Canadians to deregulate. And now we're seeing that same focus here in the United States, which certainly augurs not, you know, very well for our future safety. And these particular trains, as I learned reading Bruce's book, you know, they go right across Canada and the U.S. They go through big cities like Minneapolis, for example, and little towns in Maine and Quebec. And there's still a huge danger. And the regulations have not improved.
So the RCC is designed to look at regulations between the U.S. and Canada, but Mexico is also part of NAFTA. And then, as you've researched and reported on before, a lot of times there are back doors in some of these trade agreements, like you had talked about how CETA was a potentially a backdoor for the U.S. to do trade with Europe, even though it was only between Canada and the EU. And I guess what I'm wondering is can the Regulatory Cooperation Council, will the work that's being done there have effects beyond the U.S. and Canada because of the way trade flows work?
Well, I think the answer to that is that there's a separate, there was a separate council that was created between the U.S. and Mexico called the High Level Regulatory Cooperation Task Force or something like that. That has not been kind of re-upped by the Trump administration, but I don't know why. I don't know if they were waiting for the new administration in Mexico because they have a brand new president or not. So there may well be still a parallel process between the U.S. and Mexico that's very similar to the U.S.-Canadian RCC. But in addition, as I mentioned, the NAFTA itself contains a great deal of language requiring or at least promoting in a pretty major way regulatory cooperation between Canada, Mexico, and the United States in many areas, and a lot of them around the same areas that these companies have come forward and said ought to be done here. So, for example, like food safety and meat inspections, labeling not only for food, but also for hazardous chemicals and cosmetics and sort of personal consumer products. There's a whole range of things where the new NAFTA either mandates or very strongly encourages this kind of sort of behind the scenes discussion before anything can be done. And so I think that it will apply to Mexico. And I think the concern is, regardless of whether you call it the RCC or something else, that these are discussions that have one goal, and that is to reduce regulation. And secondly, they will for sure delay regulation, even if they don't succeed in simply getting rid of, protections that we would like to see put in place. And certainly in all three countries, you know, what we have right now is inadequate. We talked about the terrible meat inspection programs that we have right now that are really not adequate for protecting food safety, not only in meat, but also, you know, we've had all these scares around vegetables that have been unsafe and are actually killing people, because of contamination. So we have a long way to go. And so at a minimum, we know for sure that these kinds of regulatory discussions are not going to allow those improvements to happen. And they may well support rolling back regulations. For example, this whole 2-for-1 crazy executive order from the Trump administration. But that is something that is specifically preventing additional protections from being put into place.
So the Trump administration did actually take public comments for the role of the Regulatory Cooperation Council under the new NAFTA. And I'm wondering if you're getting any indication for what they see its role being or how they want to change the council going forward.
Well, you can't, I don't really know yet. All we have is what they put in the Federal Register when they asked for comments. And what was quite disturbing about that request for comments was that they listed a number of things that commenters could talk about. One of them being that the RCC would be a way to carry out the Trump administration's executive order saying that two regulations should be repealed for every one, which makes it pretty darn clear that this RCC is intended to be a deregulatory entity under the Trump administration, not something that's just looking in a neutral way to make sure that regulations between Canada and the U.S. Don't prevent trade that, you know, could go forward in a safe and thoughtful way. So I think that is a big tip off that really bad things could come out of this. In terms of the relationship with the new NAFTA, as I mentioned, this wasn't part of the original NAFTA in terms of being mentioned in it. And even the new NAFTA doesn't use the words Regulatory Cooperation Council, but it does have a great deal of text that talks about requiring regulatory cooperation before any kind of mandatory regulations are put into place. And in some places, you know, there's a kind of a link over to this Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs, which runs the Regulatory Cooperation Council. So there is a link between the two. And certainly what we've seen is that these companies are coming forward with their comments and saying, hey, there's all this stuff in the new NAFTA that says you can't do these kinds of regulations, and we should be talking about it in the RCC and making sure that the RCC is used to basically enforce what has been written in NAFTA. And I find it somewhat shocking that they're making these statements, even though NAFTA hasn't even been approved by any of the three countries' parliaments or congresses. And also, for example, in the case of the labeling, the food labeling provisions, the specific language was actually taken out of the new NAFTA. They didn't get it in, but they're trying to get it anyway through this Regulatory Cooperation Council. So again, it's doing stuff behind closed doors with people on committees. You don't know who they are. And it's, you know, even for someone like myself or IETP as an organization to try to insert itself into this, it's really hard to see how you do that. And even if you were able to get on one of these committees or something, you're completely outnumbered by all the industry groups, which are very fully paid with lots of staff to just sit around and be parts of these, you know, meetings, which, you know, we just don't have that kind of capacity, and neither do any other groups out there that represent just regular people.
Okay, so now that you know about the Regulatory Cooperation Council and you're paying attention to it, what is it that you're going to be looking for going forward? And if I'm just a member of the public, what can I be doing to either stay informed or be advocating for better oversight?
Well, I think in terms of staying informed, probably IETP is a good place to come to our website, because I seem to be one of the few people around that's really focused on this thing, and I'm going to continue to look at that. In terms of what you can do, I really think that members of Congress need to know about this. I'm pretty convinced that almost none of them have ever heard of this thing. And they don't know it's been going on in the past, and they certainly don't know what's going on now. And we're seeing a lot of activity around the Trump administration trying to roll back a lot of regulations and things that really important protections, both environmental, food safety, you name it pretty much. And this could be a way of continuing that long into the future. So I think it's really important that members of Congress are aware of it, and that perhaps other organizations outside of IETP and Food and Water Watch. I know the UAW got involved and submitted comments, but there were very few that seemed to be really aware of what's happening. So if you have a connection, if you're a member of one of these organizations that's paying attention to a particular concern, like a labor concern, for example, then bring it up with them and say, can we find out about this? Can we get involved in this? You know, what are they actually doing? Let's shine a light on what's happening.
Thanks for joining me on the podcast today, Sharon.
You're welcome.
To stay up to date on the Regulatory Cooperation Council and Sharon's work, including to read her recent article, Agribusiness's Secretive Plans to Unravel Food Safety and Worker Protections, you can visit our website at www.iatp.org. I want to remind you the podcast is available for download on Stitcher and Apple Podcasts. If you like what you hear, please give us a positive rating. If you have any questions about what you heard today, you can get in touch by sending an email to jwise@iatp.org. Thanks for listening.